The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.
It's been a wonderful show thus far. We've got about an hour left.
I just would like to say that I think the GameCube does not suck, because I enjoy the GameCube. And he said, well, your friends should have bought a PlayStation 2. And it's like, yeah, get a PlayStation 2, but GameCube is good for its own games.
Why? Now, why do you say that?
Because Nintendo has attracted certain developers and certain type of games that you can't get on any other thing.
Like Zelda and Mario.
Not just by their first, but I mean like Beautiful Joe, which I know they made a PlayStation port, but that was, and plus the fact that you can play import games on it without having to open it up and install a mod chip if you get a boot disc.
And a boot disc for the, you mean like a hack for it?
There's a hack for playing import games. It's a disc that you boot, you stick it in, and the video game import sites, like Video Game Depot, and it runs up, spins, thinks that it's legitimate, and then you can stick in your Japanese game, and it'll boot up on an American system, and you don't have to open it up and install a mod chip.
I've never used that.
Well, it's great for... They had one on, like, Dreamcast and PlayStation 1 for playing imported games.
See, I guess I've never really wanted to play any kind of imports. I haven't seen anything. I mean, I can't read any imported language, so I have to ask, well, how am I going to get around it? How am I going to know point A to point B?
Well, it's... my friend that I play games with is this incredible freak about Godzilla. So,
of course,
yeah. So he has
that's all you can get is from imports.
Yeah. So he has imports for pretty much almost every Godzilla game that's ever made for the Japanese Sega Saturn. And
does he still have a Sega Saturn? Is it the same friend that has all the old?
Yeah. I still have a Sega Saturn.
Really?
Yes.
Well, you probably want
to. You keep referring to this guy as your friend.
No. His name's BBQ. He actually. If you've rented videos in Lower Queen Anne, you've probably rented videos from him.
I have not.
I have not rented video games in Lower Queen Anne.
I haven't rented movies, forever, it seems.
Well, actually, what I do is recently I got Roxio Popcorn, which I've been using in conjunction with Mac the Ripper. So it's really – sort of wonder. It's like, okay, if you rent a movie, okay, you have the legal ability to make copies of movies that you own. Okay, that you're not breaking the law. But when you're renting something, can you copy it then?
It's questionable. Because you're just borrowing.
I would say that that's a legal stretch. Because if you're copying something that you own, you're making a backup copy. So unless the Blockbuster or whoever has authorized you to hold their backup copies for them.
But they already got my money for the rental. So it's like the thing is what I'll do is it's sort of like TiVo for movies, because I have like five movies that I haven't watched yet, which I've copied.
Yeah, it happens.
But I still buy movies but I'd never distribute them to your friends, because that'd be bad.
Exactly. Well, especially if you sold them. You'd be a bad friend, number one. Number two, that's slightly illegal.
Yeah, not slightly. The MPA would... probably shouldn't talk about audio-video piracy.
You haven't actually said that you do this on a regular basis.
This is all a hypothetical discussion.
It's all hypothetical.
Exactly, it's all hypothetical. But earlier in the show, I was telling you about my recent gadget acquisition after having sold the Nikon Coolpix. Well, actually, before selling it, I hadn't found a buyer before I bought it. Yeah, the camera. This is the camera, and of course, no one else can see it. But it's a Canon PowerShot S2IS, and I think I've already sold three of these.
It is the most jewel-worthy camera I have seen in a long, long time, unless you go up to the SLR level.
Yeah, and this is only $500. 12 magnification, optical zoom. The IS stands for image stabilization. Of course, it's got the flip-out screen, which is almost essential for any digital camera. The neat thing about this is, I mean, it's got a lot of neat features. But the neat thing is you can take a video, unlimited video, as long as you're card can hold it or handle it. I've got a high speed Ultra 2 in there. I think it was a SanDisk product. Very fast. You can take an unlimited amount of movie, 640 by 480, 30 frames per second. Here, Jake, hold it down halfway, get the focus, then put it on all the way. The great thing about this camera, or one of the great things, it's not the great thing, one of them, is that the boot time is almost nothing. It takes absolutely no time at all to boot up. It's faster than hell.
Shutter lag is like very, very minimal.
Yeah,
for...
it's nothing. I mean, you can do a high quality snapshot, so like, you know, continual shooting, you know, until your card fills up, and it'll just constantly write it to the card. It's absolutely amazing what they've done with this particular model of the PowerShot. Form factor, it's not pocket camera. It's definitely closer to pocket camera. It seems to be a bit squatter than the G series that the Canon has. I think that's kind of on its last legs.
That's a pretty lens to try to put in your pocket.
Yeah, it actually could pass for an old 35 millimeter. I mean, yeah. It really looks like you got a high-end 35 millimeter.
And this thing, I just... speed, features, the cool thing. It's got like, at first I thought, well, this is kind of stupid, I'm never going to use it. Usually when you have digital cameras, you have certain onboard features that you seldom use, like the black and white profile or the sepia profile. And you can do that in software, so it doesn't really matter that the camera does it itself if you can do it in software when you put it in Photoshop or any kind of image editor that can tweak that stuff. But this thing has got a color swapper. So you aim the camera at like a color. Like, let's say I aim it at blue, and I press a button.
Kind of like using the eyedropper in Photoshop.
Yeah, the eyedropper in Photoshop. And then you point at something else and say, this is the color I want it to be. It gives you a live, real-time preview of the way the live color swap. As you're moving the camera around, you can see what color will be swapped with another.
Okay, I'm going to have to bite. Why would you want to do this?
I'll show you.
Okay.
It's cool.
It's cool.
The wow factor is through the roof.
Is it just for fun?
No.
Is there
no, it's not just for fun. Let's say I'm
real time color correction.
Yeah. Let's say I want to paint these walls. Okay, so I want to paint these walls, but I don't know what kind of color. I have an idea about what I want the color to be. So, let me turn it on. It takes, you know, okay, it's on. It takes no time at all. I go into the function menu. I'm going to go to an auto white balance here. Then I go to I'm going to talk about the color swap here. Press color swap, set, and here's the color that I'm trying to change. So I want this color here to be. Let's see here.
Your shirt would probably be about the best color choice right now because it's a good solid color you could point at.
What, my shirt?
Your shirt.
Yeah, it's kind of big. Well, I've got an idea. I've got I've got vitamin water sitting in front of me, so I can make it that. So if I put the, let's bump up the. You see that? As I'm pointing to the wall, it's a live preview. So all the color that's that hue is getting replaced with a different color.
Why Japan? I mean,
cool.
It's cool, but it's like. You know, if you think about how all of the people, the engineers that have worked on, like, there's probably camera engineers that have been working, building cameras for Nikon or for Canon for so many years, and now they're finally, you know, with digital technology and stuff, it's sort of weird. And you think about all the people that have like you know, this is what they do, is to try and think of like what other features can we cram into this thing.
That's a cool. I mean, you kind of got like, it's a lot easier to do it that way, though, than for a novice to go in and have to change a bunch of Photoshop.
Especially if you're not a tweaker. But here's another neat thing, and unfortunately we're not in an environment that has something with strong contrast, but there's a color accent feature. So if I see here, this is maybe not a good sample, but right now if I say I want to accent this orange, mm-hmm. it'll just keep that color and black and white everything else. So it'll grayscale everything else. Live in real time. Do you see how that works?
Yeah.
Now, is that neat?
That's augmented reality.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Now, just tell me.
It's very cool.
That's wow factor.
Have you ever played around with iToy for PlayStation 2?
Oh, is that the webcam that plugs in?
No, it's not a web camera. It looks like a web camera, but they have camera-based games. Where like,
you know, those things are fun for like,
yeah, they're
5
great.
Minutes.
They're great for
and
kids.
Then, yeah, for kids. The nice thing about having it on camera is if I'm trying to get a stylistic shot, mm-hmm. you can suddenly with the same scene take the picture. It takes a stylistic picture, but then it also keeps the original. So you've got a basis of comparison. I've posted one to Flickr that's just, in my opinion, very, very cool.
But supposedly. You know, I mean, the idea of having something do an image analysis and manipulation in almost real time or pseudo real time, Microsoft is looking to incorporate something like that into like the next version of Xbox Live that they talked about with a little web camera. And so, you know, who knows?
Yeah, you know, I think that's the first like onboard piece of software that I've ever been impressed with.
Yeah.
Like in terms of on a camera, because usually it's all kind of like, eh, it's no big deal. This is actually, I think, pushing the envelope a little further. Another nice feature about this particular camera, the S2IS, is that when I'm taking a video, I can actually take a picture. A 5-megapixel picture at the same time. I don't have to flip to any mode. This is the special movie button. I press this, it records a movie no matter which mode I'm in. And then I can take a regular old picture too.
What does it record, the video? What does it record to?
It records AVI, like probably, I don't know if it'd be an MP4. AVI is probably just a wrapper.
It's got to be MP4 because there's no way that you could do raw AVI files and actually have any space left on that card.
This is the cool thing. Usually digital cameras, it takes a while. After you record a movie, it takes a while to record to the drive. With this, it's instant.
Well, so does it have a drive or does it have flash memory?
No, it's flash. Okay. This is flash. But the way it writes to it is it writes it instantly. So I was in a house. I was recording a video. I was going to show people this house that we're looking at. And I got to the end of the tour, and suddenly the battery died. I'm like, I didn't get to save the video, so I was like, oh great, I'm in trouble now. No, it was there, the whole thing intact. I mean, it saved it to that point, cut off the file, and it was done.
Well,
so
I didn't lose that data. With my, I have a pretty low range Kodak camera, and that features was video recording, but it's nowhere near anything that I would actually want to edit.
Yeah.
You know, but the only thing I record is, again, the cat's doing something weird.
Yeah.
But it recorded to the card and actually said, like, you know, I had an SD card and it sort of said it wasn't quite fast enough to do record and it needed what was the slower one? SD, and then it went to MMC?
Oh, you mean as far as cards
XD?
Go?
XD?
XD is a little one.
Yeah.
Right,
one
XD
like,
is
are you talking
the,
Smart Media that was like the really
like
wafer
yeah.
thin flat one?
Yeah, yeah. The first one.
Smart Media.
Well,
SD, right?
SD is Secure Digital. And right. They have like, I don't know if you, it's there's a higher speed SD. Of course, there's higher speed everything. But then MMC is a completely different thing. And then there's also...
Well, it's like you talked earlier about like, you know, wanting to have one particular, like, you know, one universal audio file format. It's like, do you think we're ever going to see the
soon as Sony gets out of the market, yes.
Well, no, as long as you buy within the Sony universe, you do have one. Well, no, actually, you have like
not.
Six cards.
There's like...
Yeah, the Memory Stick Pro, the Pro Duo, what's the mini one called? It's all over the map. And I finally had to buy one for the PSP because I wanted to take around media with me. This thing, it's just got a few drawbacks. And it uses rechargeable batteries, like as in, or it just uses
double A's.
But I've got rechargeables in there. The Energizer, I think they're 2500.
NiMH batteries, right?
Yep. What is that? Nickel metal hydride. And that's what the Canon recommends. I didn't buy the official Canon batteries. I'm like, I don't need to go that far. But the thing I like about Canon cameras, I've had more Canon digital cameras than anything else. I had Nikon the last time. That's the last Nikon I'm ever going to buy. Canon listens to its consumers. This is the PowerShot S2. So there's obviously a PowerShot S1. And the people who use the S1 and love the S1 still had some issues. They said, well, you know, I wish this could be this way and this way and this way. Canon listened to those customers and incorporated a lot of the things that they wanted in the S2. And they did the same thing with the G1 compared to the G2. They listened to customer feedback and they incorporated the features. Unfortunately, however, Canon really passed the G2. They really didn't do much with the G series. I mean, and I had a G2, a G3, and a G5, and then that's when I said, you know what? The only thing that's changing here is megapixels, and the camera could be so much more. And I mean, in terms of what it could do for me. And that's when I leaped to Nikon, and then as soon as I saw the specs for the PowerShot S2IS, I was just like blown away. And then I got the camera, and I was really blown away. Image quality seems to be good. You know, average digital camera, 5-megapixel stuff. My Nikon was an 8-megapixel camera, and in my opinion, a little bit of overkill.
So, what software do you use? Any image management software to store your pictures? I mean, I'm in the process since I went back to Mac, taking several years worth of digital photos and putting into like iPhoto and editing. And my problem is like all these duplicates. And I actually got a little piece of software, freeware called iPhoto Diet, which will go through and look for duplicates and
that's
recommend
impressive.
Them for deletion.
We have, well, Windows users, the closest thing we have to a good photo management tool is Picasa.
Yeah.
And that's now free from Google. And
for now.
Yeah. Well, hopefully will remain free. It wasn't free at one point. It was shareware. What was the company's name that had Picasa? I don't know.
Wasn't the company's name Picasa?
It may have been Picasa. No, yeah. It was an owned company. It was one of those Idea Lab companies.
Oh, that's right.
It was a split off from Idea Lab.
I'm so surprised Microsoft. Does Microsoft have anything like that?
They say they do. I say they don't.
Yeah.
They have a digital image photo suite, but it's like $89 bucks or something like
picture
that.
Picture It is the photo management portion of it.
It sucks. And if it didn't, I would say it didn't. But it sucks. I mean, especially compared to the elegance of Picasa, which is absolutely free. And it has been great even when it wasn't free. So when I need to browse for photos, that's what I'll use. I'm just fine in the Windows Explorer because I usually know where I'm going and how I'm getting there. I don't have so many digital photos that I don't know which is where and which end is up. I tend to keep things organized in folders from the very beginning so that it's a lot easier. I also don't keep everything that I take a picture of. I take a series of like 10 shots and then keep the best one. I don't keep 10 shots at the same thing. I don't even keep two. I keep the best one.
See, what I do is I have a external USB hard drive that I just have everything backed up on, and it's just sort of like this digital junk drawer filled with all sorts of stuff.
See, I edit as I go. I do the same thing when I write. I edit as I go. So that way it's not overwhelming when I need to look at it again. So it seems we have another caller here, 888-PERILLO, 888-7474-556 is the number that you can call. And we'll be here for at least another 50 minutes with Jake from 8-Bit Joystick. And right now we'll be speaking with Rico.
Rico?
Is that it?
No, it's Rotterboy from your IRC. Yeah.
Hang on, Jake. Could you turn up the volume? Because I say that again.
Rotterboy from your IRC chat.
Rotterboy.
Yeah.
I don't know where Jake got Rico from.
All right.
But I think you've just gained a new nickname.
Oh, right on.
Yo, Rico.
So, anyway, yeah. So you've been in the chat room just tonight?
Yeah. Actually, I had a problem with my computer.
Uh oh.
And
You've called the right place.
I was seeing if you could help me out.
Sure, I can try.
They told me to call you up.
Well, that's usually a good thing. It's the easiest way to get a hold of me when I'm doing the show.
All right, cool. Yeah, I've been using Windows 98 for the past like 4 years, and my sister used my computer the other day, and now I'm getting this end of user agreement. Popping up whenever I start my computer, and I can't get through it, even with the
end of user agreement
registration code that I have.
Wait a minute. So you're getting the end user license agreement for Windows?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yes, it says Microsoft Windows 98 Second Edition. And user license agreement for Microsoft Desktop Operating.
That sounds kind of strange.
Could be spyware?
Yeah, have you...
Jake, the other Jake,
have you
thought
have,
it might be spyware.
Yeah, have you scanned for spyware?
You know, I can't even scan right now. I can't even get into Windows.
Oh, ooh. You're getting the EULA then. Well, unless she erased the key, like it's like a series of five digits... Five times over, so it's like 25 key alphanumeric characters,
right?
And you don't have that anywhere.
Actually, I found the book, but it doesn't have.
It's not in there.
It does. I've got the certificate of authenticity.
Is there a sticker on the side of the computer? Is this like a computer from like HP or Dell or anybody like that?
It's compact.
Well, is there a sticker on the side somewhere that would have the registration code?
I don't think they were doing that until XP.
No, they did that for a long time, at least in the corporate world.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, it's finding your serial number is pretty much what you're going to need. I don't know what she would have done to eliminate that necessarily. With Windows 98, God, I'm trying to think if you could do this. there is, you could, in theory, restore an earlier copy of the registry.
Right.
And you could do this from the command line. It's been so long. I'm trying to remember how to do it.
Time I update my computer, huh?
Gosh, I can't believe you've lived with Windows 98 on that machine for that long.
What you might want to, if you get rid of it, try installing Linux.
Really?
Well, why not? You know, if this is your operating system's not working.
Right.
Yeah, but are you saying that just for shock value, Jake?
I don't know, but maybe.
I think he's saying it for shock value.
Get a new computer and try Linux on the old one.
Well, you know.
But I don't know. I mean, what about, could he call Microsoft technical support and say, hey, this is what's going on? Do they
You could
probably,
honestly,
stuff?
If you were creative about it, and I'm not going to tell you how to do it, but if you're creative about it, I know you could find a workaround.
Uh-huh.
By looking for certain things online. You could probably find your way around it.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember the old registry command. There was a way to back it up. It's automatically backed up with every boot up. I think it was reg scan. Hang on just a second here.
Google can find everything.
Yeah, I love Google. I think it's a utility called reg scan.
Okay.
And it's something that runs on Windows 98 startup, at least if I remember right. I have not used Windows 98 for God knows how long. Let's see here, reg scan. Yeah, I'm finding. Maybe it isn't reg scan. I thought it was reg scan. Give me a second. This is kind of throwing me for a loop here. But there's a way to restore the older copies of the registry, and it's not registry. Every time I do a search for scan reg, that's it, not reg scan. Reg scan is spyware.
Oh, okay.
I believe reg scan is spyware. Scan reg. Hang on. I got it right. I just kind of transposed them. Go ahead. Do a search on Google for like scan reg, scanreg.exe.
Okay.
And you should be able to find they'll be able. It will be able to detail how to do it. In fact, if I'm looking at it right, boot into DOS where you're not touching Windows at all. And I think as Windows starting, if you don't see the menu, I think you tap F8 to see the menu, and then it gives you a selection. It's like I said, I'm playing this completely from memory, dude.
Yeah, I've already tried that when it first starts up, hitting F8, it doesn't even do that anymore.
It won't even do that?
No. It goes straight into Windows.
No, there has to be a fail-safe switch. There has to be. Boot up, my suggestion, boot up from a floppy, and then go to the C drive, and go. You're going to edit a file called msdos.sys. Now, it may be read-only. Again, this is like super technical. How technical can you get?
I can follow directions pretty well.
Okay. Boot up from the floppy, you know, go to the C drive, and then in the root of C, there's a file called msdos.sys. God, this is taking me back, by the way. You may have to change the attributes of the file, because by default it's read only. I think the command is attrib, attrib space, and then you may have to put the command first, like minus R space msdos.sys. You're going to have to download this podcast after we put it online to hear this again. And then edit the file. And there should be a line in the file that it should read something along the lines of the menu or the boot menu, show boot menu. And you would put that at 1. And it will say how long do you want to display the boot menu. You can, you know, you bump up the seconds. And that should get you to at least that point. Well, actually, I don't even know if you need to go that far.
Okay.
Hey, is there a bootable CD in the CD drive? Someone just called in.
Let me see.
That would be strange if it was.
Mm.
Well, one of my CD drives doesn't open anymore.
One of his CD drives doesn't open anymore. Sounds like this is a very old system.
Yeah.
And you know, I just realized something. If you can boot into a floppy, you shouldn't even need to edit any MS-DOS sys stuff to see a menu, because you'll be able to access the C drive. From there, run scan reg. And okay. Did I say that right? Yeah, scanreg.exe /restore. And it should give you a list of like the available backup files that were made, assuming this is a default installation of Windows 98. And then from there, you can select the available backup files from the command line. So just boot into a floppy, then you should be able – the Windows directory should be in the path. So you should just type in scanreg / and you scanreg space / backup or restore, and then it should pull up the options for you.
All right.
Try that, and hopefully an older copy of the registry before this thing had happened had been restored.
All right.
Or had been backed up so that you can restore.
Okay. So that won't kill everything that's on my computer?
No, it'll just basically restore the registry to a state that it was at the time that it was backed up. So it's the registry, unless you made massive changes between then and the time that there was an error. Which is not very likely, because the last time you were in there, you had the error. It shouldn't decimate anything. You're just basically writing a quote unquote newer copy of the registry with an older one that worked.
Oh, okay.
It will not touch any of the files that you have installed. It shouldn't touch any files that you may have in My Documents or anything. It just restores a couple of files in the Windows folder or directory.
All right.
So does that give you a little more nudge in the right direction?
Yeah, definitely.
Like I said, I'm sorry that my Windows 98 skills are not as sharp as they once were.
Okay.
So
thank you very much.
It's no problem.
It's kind of
what we do around here.
All right. Thank you.
No, thanks again. Keep listening.
Have a good one.
You too.
Bye.
888 Perillo. That's 888-747-4556. I wouldn't even know where to begin with Windows 98. I walked away from that whole series of Windows when Windows 2000 was mature enough for me to actually use in my home system.
Got I got a technical question for you. It's like on Apple's batteries, do you know of any notebooks that do this that have a little power meter built into the battery?
That's kind of cool.
It is slick. But it also has a thing where you need a coin to change the battery. They have a little lock so it doesn't fall out, but you need to like go and use like a butter knife or something to turn it.
Yeah, they do the same thing on the keyboards.
Okay. So do you know if any other computer makers that do this that have?
Not that I know of.
Yeah.
Why? Are you having an issue?
Well, no,
or
it's just
you
like,
want one?
Sometimes it's like I want to change a battery, but I don't have a coin on me, and it's like the paperclip. Back in the disk-operated Macs, your universal tool was the paperclip.
I've used paperclips before, even to get floppies or even CDs that were stuck.
Well, you know, one of the problems is they when the lamp iMac came out, desk lamp.
I had one.
There was what was it like a Celine Dion CD that in Britain that they released that had like DRM that like non-standard, and they had no warning on it. And what it would do is it would lock up your Mac, crash, then not boot up because it would get in a constant loop because the OS X would try to boot the CD and it couldn't because it couldn't find it. It had like deliberate bad sectors. And so you literally had to take it to like an Apple store, have them open it up to get the Celine Dion CD out. And you know, and it's like, you know, they need to. I actually think they should pass legislation saying it's like if you're going to try and do dignify and call it copy protection, but if you're going to do deliberate bad sectors, we need big warning labels.
See, I think they should just pass legislation that they need warning labels on Celine Dion.
Yeah.
No, wait. So are you not very much of an advocate for DRM?
For certain things, you know. It's one of those things that, you know, it has a potential for going wrong. It's something incredible. It's like, you know, you're talking about...
I think
it has. Yeah, well, it's just wait until... You know, I'm sort of surprised, just blown away, that when in Longhorn they announced that originally they call it Palladian, and then they call it TC, Trusted Computing Platform, and then they announced that that's not going to be a part of Palladian, or part of Longhorn. And, you know, and the idea of having a DRM-based structure in the the genetics of the system. And that's one of the things that people talk about, the Apple's move to Intel, is Intel is sort of looking at the possibility. They've of course been working on like the whole concept of a secure boot. But, you know, then there's the whole thing about, like, you know, if you're using one standard encryption for everything, if everyone locks everything up with the exact same key, it can, you know, I'm sure that what they're working...
It shouldn't be the same key, though. Because if it's an encryption... Because, I mean, you're talking about... what you're talking about there is encrypting the entire hard drive and using a hardware token to be able to boot it. And the hardware token in that instance is the something on the motherboard. And I mean that's kind of different than DRM because I mean you're talking depending on what the encryption structure is. I mean each separate machine is going to have its own key system in order to boot unless everybody uses the exact same password and in randomizing that password, the same key is generated each time.
Well, what I sort of meant is it's sort of like it had an operating system which had DRM technologies built into it, and they talked about how that could be like medical records, how you could have medical record files that, like, you know, you could read, my doctor could read, my girlfriend could read, but no one else could. Or and they were actually thinking about, you know, how could that impact future whistleblowers? You know, I mean, having the ability, if you had, like, you know, electronic documents with the company and the company was doing, like, you know, illegal, horrible stuff, in that can only be read or by, you know, that company. You couldn't print, like, you know, having the whole thing about not being able to take like a screenshot or something. And these were ideas that were thrown around, and they do have, you know, really good possibilities for, like, you know, if they had DRM for online publishing. But it's sort of like as soon as you build a better lock, people figure out how to build a better lock pick.
Yeah. It's always going to be the case. You know, there's with the move of Apple going to Intel, they're saying that you won't be able to run Windows on the hardware, you won't be able to run OS 10 on Intel hardware, but they're not really saying anything necessarily, or they're not going to stop Windows software from running on the platform.
Well, what I think is going to happen is Microsoft owns Virtual PC.
Yep.
I think that we're going to see, rather than having a dual boot, you know, we're going to see a really awesome version of Virtual PC, because they're already using Virtual PC to develop Longhorn right now. I've met Longhorn developers, and that's what they do. And so it'd be a very similar thing. What do you think about the name MacTel?
Isn't that funny?
I'm sort of wondering about that.
It's reminiscent of KTEL, the records, you know, the old... Used to order them, you know, $29.95, and you can order the 8-track from KTEL. No, I think it'll be interesting to see how that goes. I mean, I certainly would be quite warm to buying Apple-based hardware, and if not dual booting, then being able to access Windows software just as easily from within OS X.
That's probably what I think they're more likely to do is they'll probably have a pretty sweet – Microsoft would be smart. See, the problem is on – Virtual PC is 100%, it used to be back when this other company made it, is that the emulator authors got $50 and Microsoft got $100 because it came with a copy of Windows. Mm-hmm. Is if they had, when Mac goes Intel, if they realized, you know, if they got it down to, say, $50, that would just fly and it'd be, you know, but this is such a major thing. Who knows what's going to happen? And I'm sort of a little skeptical of running old PowerPC code, RISC code, through emulation on CISC-based hardware.
Well, but they've said that every version of OS X has been running on Intel hardware.
Yeah, yeah. They've been recompiling it. But I'm talking about software that's specifically made for, like, AltaVec G4 stuff in G5.
Wait, how long did it take for... most apps to become Cocoa natively. Well, Cocoa or Carbon?
Carbon was the move from Mac Classic to this. What this is more analogous to is the move from Motorola 680K chips to PowerPC. And what they did is they used a technique called fat binaries, where they basically had included is one application, but it included code is basically recompiled to run at for PowerPC and old CISC based Macs back in, like, you know, 1990. But so it could be seamless, but it's like you're going to want to upgrade all of your stuff, and there's going to be all these little updates.
Legacy stuff.
Yeah, but it's not going to be hard because they're just going to have to, like, recompile it and stuff. But
so now Mac authors are going to have to offer a PowerPC-based download and an Intel-based download?
No, probably it's going to be a combined download, but it's going to be like twice the size.
Yeah, so is that going to bloat the size?
It did.
But does that bloat performance? So if
no, because it's only running one or the other. This is back when they went to the fat binaries when they went switched to PowerPC, and it went gradually. Originally, when Photoshop 2.5, I started using it at 2.
Back when Harvard Graphics was still around.
Back when I ran it on a 12 megahertz Mac LLC, which I tricked out with 6 megs of RAM.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's fast.
Yeah. I actually used to read a book while it was compressing a JPEG. And that's not – no, that's not an analogy. That's actually happened. So you know, but the whole thing is for the tech, I don't see problems from, like, the big reason why I think Apple did this is notebooks. They're selling a heck of a lot of notebooks. They're selling a heck of a lot of iPods. And didn't it recently that notebooks are now outselling desktop PCs on certain.
Oh, they are. Like, yeah. Is that across the board or is that just
that's
an Apple
like across
thing?
The board. It's not an Apple thing. I've heard there's a study that came out recently.
Well, notebooks are finally getting to the point where, you know, they're lightweight, they're really truly portable. You know, they've got enough features on them that you want to carry it around with you. And of course, now the whole idea of a tablet PC is thrilling to some people.
Well, see, the thing is that Apple might. Intel put a lot of work in making low power consumption chips and low heat consumption.
Oh,
chips.
Certainly. I mean, with their next
generation.
Apple
hasn't been able to get that out of the G series,
right?
Of processors.
And because the problem is that all the people that's developing it is IBM's division, and IBM's been working on making bigger, hotter, faster chips. And it's like the G5. The fact that they actually had to include a liquid cooling fan system on it. Is, you know, you can't put that into a notebook.
It should have said something to Apple a long time ago. The fact that IBM has never used their own chips for their own computers.
Yeah, that's
that should have been like an eye opening thing.
Not surprised. Well, it seems we got a caller on the line. It's Sword of Destiny, and I imagine that's his handle from the chat room.
No, that's his real name.
Oh wow, that's an amazing name.
Hey,
Sword of Destiny. Is that Swedish?
No, it's actually my chat name.
Oh, it is the chat name. All right, so what can we do you for?
All right, well, I have had this HP Pavilion for, like, since 2002, and that was about the year I started joining Barker Dome. But it came with a HP CDR-W writer, and every time you put a CD in it or you use it at all, it starts to buzz really loudly. And, I mean, I put it up for it since 2002, but it's just really starting to get on my nerves lately since I do a lot of gaming.
What speed is it?
I don't know. It doesn't say anywhere.
You could get, if you wanted to find out, you could download Nero's info tool. If you go to Nero.com, I think they have it available for free, or they should have it available for free. It's called info tool, and that will tell you the speed of the drive. I mean, it'll tell you a lot about the drive.
Or the BellArc Advisor will tell you. Or
I was never much for BellArc. It doesn't. There seem to be better tools out there suited for.
So it works fine. It's just very loud, right?
Sword?
Yeah.
Yes. It works fine. It's just loud.
Yeah, it works fine most of the time.
Okay, are your discs clean and do they have labels on them?
Most of them.
Like physical labels that you've attached to them or just like written on the top? It's like I'm wondering about if sometimes it's like they can get really loud if you got like a label on it and it'll spin and it's off center and get some.
Well, it could be the understand there's movable. I mean, CD-ROM, it's a movable part.
Right.
So as time wears on, it's not going to run as optimally as it did in the very beginning. And if you're saying that you picked it up in 2002,
yeah, and it did that then too.
Oh, it did that, and it may just be the drive.
Some drives are just loud. Really loud.
Some of them are louder than others. That's certain. And certainly, if it spins fast, it's going to be louder because it's reading, and it's reading at a faster rate, so it's going to spin faster and make more noise.
I actually had a CD at work blow up on me in the drive.
It can happen.
I had a slight crack in it, and I put it in. And it's a 50X Dell, and it spun up and went, pow. And exploded into like 1,000 pieces, and I actually had to open up and use a can of compressed air to get
it's
all.
It's too bad
the,
you didn't have a camera in there to film that.
Oh, it would have been awesome. I didn't. All
no,
my,
it probably
all,
would have exploded the camera too.
All of my neighbors came over and was like, "What happened?"
there's a gunfight in your computer.
But,
who won? Who won?
So yeah, that's
well,
a problem because they're spinning them around
right,
really fast.
Maybe if you would. I'm trying to think. What operating system is that running? Is that on XP or?
Yeah, XP
okay.
Home.
Okay. I know there was a way to do this in the older version in Windows 98 of all things. I'm trying to think if there's a way to do it in XP, but to throttle down the speed of the drive. And like, most likely there is a way to do it through a utility. I don't think there's a possibility. Well, maybe. Hang on, just a second. I'm going to find out, but it could be a case that it's just spinning up so fast that that's what's making a lot of the noise, and you may be able to throttle down the speed of the drive somewhat. So what I'm going to do, I'm just going to check, and this it may be different depending on each individual drive. I'm going to look in my XP computer management console.
Got a question for you. Are you keeping it on your desk or underneath it or what?
It's underneath the desk. It's in
okay.
a little care. It's in a cubby thing with the door off.
So oh wow! So it should actually you should.
It should be muffled fairly.
It should
well.
Be muffled. I was about to say.
You're wondering if it was up by his head, so that he
right,
be doing it
right.
Right.
Well, actually, the door is off, and I have the side of the PC off too. But it's still as loud as it was when we first got it.
Oh, you have the side of the PC off.
Yeah, but it's doing. I only took that off late. Recently, because I thought okay. my graphics card was overheating.
So you had the problem.
Oh, that would actually, I can tell you, that's probably the worst thing you can do. I know that's the first thing you'd think of is to remove the case to make it cooler, but that actually doesn't work very well because the way computer cases are designed, or most of them are designed, for heat dissipation. So you could be harming your system by opening the case. You're better off getting other cooling options or adding another fan, or you know, not using components that you're not usually or not installing or having components installed that you're not using, than you are to remove the side of the case and let it run like that. Seriously, I mean, I learned that too because I did that once, and someone told me, it's like, no, you don't want to do that. I'm like, really? So that you may consider putting the case back on and finding another way of cooling the card. I'm looking here for I'm looking in Windows XP for a way to throttle down the drive, and it's just not – I'm not seeing it.
See, I ran into a problem when I was trying to underclock my computer to run old games on my Windows PC because I came across old Pentium games that were compiled for like a Pentium 60, and I was trying to run them on a 2.4 gigahertz machine.
Crash.
No, they just run at insane speed, and it was completely unplayable because it was a psychedelic blur. And it wasn't really possible to underclock it. But in this, you know, let's see, do they make good external... I guess for games, what you're talking about is, I don't know, maybe... Would you actually consider swapping it out and upgrading to a different drive?
Well, you know, one solution to this, and this doesn't really solve the problem of it being noisy, but one thing that you could do... is create an ISO of the CD, put that on your hard drive, and download a free app like Daemon Tools, or you could buy Alcohol 120%, which are both virtual boot solutions, which would then virtually run the CD straight off your hard drive. So then you'd never get the noise of the CD drive because you're not actually using the physical CD.
Well, that's assuming he's got enough space on his hard disk. If it was 2002.
That's only 650 megs of space if it's a CD.
How much free space do you have on your hard drive?
Probably around 9 gigs right now.
See?
It's only 40
gigs. We got no problem.
You know, but why not? You know, one of the best things that I did is I bought a larger... I got a computer basically with a DVD burner. And, you know, you can toast 4.6 gigabytes worth of data on there. So I really don't, you know... if you think about, you know, if you just absolutely can't stand it,
you actually Easy Media Creator it on the Windows, not toast it.
Oh, okay.
Or Nero.
Yeah, I used to use Nero.
Let's see here. I'm still looking. I'm scouring the net as these guys are talking.
What about headphones?
Looking for a way to throttle it down.
Do you play with headphones? No, I'm serious.
No. I don't have headphones.
Get some over-the-ear headphones.
Well, no. I mean, these are obviously, those are kind of extreme workarounds. The only way I can think of making it, I'm looking for a way to throttle the in this, if I can't find it, at least I can send you in this direction. You're looking for a way to slow down the speed at which your drive is being read.
Would it be able to be done in, like, the setup menu when you push F11 when you boot the computer or whatever the button is?
I've never seen it actually happen in the BIOS. That would be something that most likely the operating system would handle. I know how to do it in Windows 98, but I'll be darned if I can find this any kind of tweaker within Windows XP. The only thing I could think of it being in, quite possibly, a program called XSetup. That's called, if you go over to xteq.com, it's like a it used to be freeware, now it's shareware, but it's like just a ton of tweaks, and there may actually be a CD speed tweak within that utility that you can actually set the speed of the drive. It's called xsetup, and go over to xteq.com. xteq.com. And and download that. I don't know if that has the tweak, but the direction I'm going to send you in is the direction of searching for something that'll throttle the CD drive down. Because it's spinning so fast, it's making a lot of noise. And the faster it spins, the louder it's going to get. You know, and as these two alluded to, you know, an easy solution is to swap out the drive if you can. It's a relatively simple procedure, but you know, if you or I'm actually going to kind of look for something to see if I can find it, because that would be useful at some points in the future when I need to throttle it down and an application doesn't actually take care of it for me. That would be my suggestion for you.
All right. Thank you.
It's no problem. Good luck. You know, and hopefully you can continue listening to the show if the CD-ROM isn't spinning. Thanks again.
All right. Bye.
Take care. So I'm going to take another breather here for a couple minutes, and I know we wanted to...
Actually, and I'm not sure...
That's from Unix.
Oh, this is a Unix command. That's unfortunate, because I have a Unix solution.
Good try.
Wait a minute. This doesn't... Oh, no, that's KDE.
That's definitely Linux.
No, there's actually a KDE shell replacement for Windows now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that.
I don't know why you'd want to do that.
I wouldn't want to do that.
Replacing something ugly with something
I would
uglier,
want to replace a Windows shell inside of Linux. And they always try to make it look that way, but it doesn't work.
I like how they call it Redmond.
Oh, yeah, the theme.
The theme.
In KDE, they call it Redmond. That's right. We've got a Mitch's segment that we haven't played back yet that I wanted people to hear just to see if we can play this on a regular basis every week. And do you have that ready?
I'm all ready to go.
All right, cool. So we're gonna listen to Mitch here for a little while, our resident web hosting guru. And with any luck, we'll be able to have him as a regular contributor to the show every single week. We'll be back in a second.
Hello, I am Mitch Keeler, LockerGnome's resident web hosting guru, with your web hosting update of the week. The web hosting update of the week is brought to you by my own podcast, The Web Hosting Show, the voice of the web hosting world. Now, I thought I'd share with you a couple of topics that I covered this week on the web hosting show. The first one being that layout theft has become bigger and bigger of a problem in the past few years. It's not only limited to web hosting companies or web hosting clients either. Anybody who's done a website design for themselves or somebody else will tell you to be careful of who sees your new layout before the official launch date or before you're ready for the public eye to be viewing it. There are many folks out there that would want to, you know, take your layout, take your designs, take your ideas, and use it for themselves. Even if you do trust somebody with seeing your layout before it's ready for the public, they could turn around on you and use it for themselves. So what are you to do? Well, if you're as paranoid as I am about these kind of things, you will not let a single soul see that design until it's ready for the public to all view it at the same time. Heck, I don't even like people walking behind my desk when I'm working on a new layout or design. It's not that I'm afraid somebody in this home, my house, is going to steal the design. I just like to keep everything to myself until I'm ready for the public opinion on it. But in this case, being paranoid is really better than having your ideas ripped off by somebody else. The recent price drops in web hosting have been very noticeable these days. With Yahoo web hosting leading the charge, prices for web hosting have been dropping like flies here recently. Of course, when the price drops, you have to do your best to stay competitive and drop your prices as well. So that's why you see so many web hosts out there going for like the $5 and under crowd for their web hosting. Now, does cheaper web hosting mean it's better web hosting? In my humble, freaky opinion, I'd say no. Unfortunately, though, it seems like in the public eye, that is not the case. Web hosting should not be judged by the price of its cost, but rather by the service and support behind it. No matter what price you end up paying for your web hosting, when push comes to shove, it is all about the quality of the servers and the quality of the web hosting support the company is willing to give you. Some cheaper web hosts do excellent support. Some don't do support at all. Some more expensive web hosts do excellent jobs in support. Some are more worried about their proverbial bottom dollar. The point of the story is, price should not be the deciding factor on if you or if you do not sign up with a web hosting company. It should be all about the support you're getting and the conditions of the server that your website will be living on. Now be sure to download the latest edition of the Web Hosting Show to hear the rest of what I have to say about these two interesting topics. Also, feel free to visit the Web Hosting Show's website to get all of the past episodes, show notes, and interviews we've done so far. And now I'd like to take you back to your regularly geeky scheduled programming.
Mitch is a nut. He's an absolute nut. All right, apparently we have a call on the line, and Jake's saying, take the call right away. We're not very secretive here at the show. We share everything, especially with callers. Hello?
How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well.
Ah, that's nice. Listen, I heard this other Jake, this new Jake, this 8-bit guy.
Yeah.
He said the iToy was fun. What was that?
Well, it's interesting as a technical thing. I don't actually own one, but it's like when I walked past it in the game store, it entertained me for 5 minutes, and then I moved on to something else. But the whole concept of having image-based, I mean, it's technically interesting to have the computer interpret video and try and use that as an input device.
Absolutely, I agree with you there.
But it's fun for kids.
Smack you if you thought it was fun.
Nah. Well, isn't there like a Dance Dance Revolution game where you actually have to like dance and do hand signals at the time with the iToy?
Don't remind me about that. I'm out of shape, and that's not a good thing.
Well,
it's not healthy.
Actually, my cousin has one of those metal pads, the $100 professional grade Dance Dance Revolution pad, and he'll do it for like an hour a day. And literally, he has.
Is he thin?
Yes, he has zero body fat.
I believe it.
And
you'd have to be to dance that long.
Yeah, but he'll go to the store and he'll stretch and do like warm ups and then put it on like the hardest thing, and people will literally like stop and stare.
And this is the guy that works at the game store?
No, it's my cousin.
Oh, okay.
So, do you have any talents like that then, Jake?
I've once beat Super Mario Brothers with my feet.
No.
Yes, I had it was like 1987 or something. I had the big joystick. And
NES Advantage.
NES Advantage.
Yeah, I remember.
But now that's probably about that.
That's impressive.
Hey, Jason.
Yeah.
By the way, I love the segments you do. They're seriously the highlight of the show.
Oh, I had to. I want to apologize to everyone in the chat room. They got a little mad at me because the audio quality this week was just completely off.
Oh, it was?
Yeah, so I wanted to apologize to them. I don't know what I did to my computer, but I'll figure it out.
Well, you probably called the right place. It didn't sound too bad from our end. I mean, was it? Maybe it was something the way it went over to the stream.
So you're the guy that doesn't like the GameCube?
What's that?
We're
like
gonna have a gaming war.
No, I was wondering if We were talking, there was a big hot rumor going on that, you know, there was going to be 221 free games on the Revolution.
That was a rumor, but yeah. What ends up, Satoru
Iwata.
Yeah, he came out and said that what they're likely to do is use it sort of as a promotion. Is that they have Famitsu publish a list of games that they already have lined up, but pretty much almost all the games that have run on the previous systems, because they have the emulation built into it and the flash memory. But they might do a thing where, like, you know, you buy Metroid Revolution and you get the previous Metroid games unlocked or downloaded or include on the games or something like that.
Well, but I was wondering if you think this will spark another emulation wars again with Nintendo.
Well, yeah, definitely. Nintendo has actually never stopped that, and it's like the quickest thing you can do to get sued is distribute Nintendo files online. And that is, it's one of the only real reasons to keep, like, Usenet readers, because that's probably the only consistent way to keep to get old emulation ROMs for the games which I already legally own.
Oh yeah, great.
Well, see,
supposed to do us for again.
You know, I think the newer games become, the more I want to play the older games.
Well, yeah, I mean, it goes around, but I think it's pretty cool how there's like, I love WarioWare and new games that are sort of, you know, new old games.
Well, what do you think about, I know you wrote a review on it, WarioWare Touched for the DS.
I liked it. I liked it a lot. It was just really cool. There's rumors that Nintendo is going to incorporate something like that into their controller design for the Revolution. There's all these ideas.
Yeah, but
not
since the original NES has Nintendo really grabbed hold of the market. I mean, yeah, they had...
Well, they're sort of getting to the idea where they sort of realize, okay, we're not going to beat Sony, we're not going to beat Microsoft. They're sort of getting content with number three and looking to have their own sort of label and games and stuff. And they're more popular in Japan when they are here. That's sort of the weird thing. And apparently the biggest game right now in Japan is Nintendogs.
I've heard about this. Is that like a Pokemon type of thing?
Well, you get to raise dogs and your own virtual 3D dog.
So it's
dog.
Like a sim kind of thing?
It's a sim Tamagotchi, and they love that type of stuff. And you can actually use the wireless networking to have your Nintendogs play with other Nintendogs wirelessly.
That's creepy.
Yeah. But, like, Japanese girls are just, like, loving it, because you actually have to, like, it's also, like, I believe it use, like, the time. So you need to play it at certain hours a day to feed the dog.
Wow.
Well, it's
oh,
sort of,
my
it's,
God. Well, that would never work here in America.
Well, you know, it's sort of like I have gotten over a addiction to Animal Crossing.
Oh, God.
And
oh, I'm playing that right now. Oh, God.
What is this here?
Animal Crossing. It's like a MMORPG offline on the GameCube. It's this little annoying cartoon town, and it's actually tied to the time, you know, like, you know, the clock. And so if it's 9:52 in the game when you're playing it, it's 9:52 in the game, and there's a store that closes at 9 o'clock. And so you can't play it later at 9 o'clock because the store will be closed. And it'll adjust for, like, seasons and stuff, and it'll read it, and the game will nag you. With people like, Jake, I haven't seen you in 2 weeks. Where have you been? And
so it's like virtual girlfriend.
Well, it's this weird little... So what I would do is fake it out and set it on, like, a six-hour time lap. I'd sort of, like, set it to European time. So
it would fit into your schedule.
Right, so I could play it at night.
So it's like, is it meant for, like, kids? So that the kids can't stay up past their bedtime and play the game?
Well, actually, what I'm surprised is no one's done it yet is a parental lock on the game systems. You know, people talk like, well, what? How are we going to protect the kids from
that's because the kids would have to set it for the parents in order to make it work.
I know. But technically, there's, like, on PlayStation 2, there's like, a region or a rating setting. And I'm surprised, like, Xbox 360 is supposed to have it, like, a parental lock. And possibly a timer, so you could only, like, you know, allow your kid to play his Xbox 360 for two, 3 hours a day.
My parents kind of had that, only it was very manual. They just said, okay, it's been an hour. We had an egg timer that sat there, and we only had a certain amount of time that we could play. We could either, I think it was, you could do it like an hour every afternoon, and then you had to like go outside for an hour, or then you had to do something else.
My parents used to take the AC adapter to punish me.
Oh, dude. Ouch. There's no way of hacking around that.
No.
My parents gave
buy
up on that.
Buy a new AC adapter.
Yeah, as well they should have, Jason. Yeah, I think my parents gave up on that too as soon as I moved out. I was like, you know what? I'm done.
So I think the Nintendo Revolution, you know, it's way too early to see. It's definitely not going to – I mean, I don't really see things currently changing as like, you know, it's probably either – it might be Microsoft a little bit on top for PlayStation 3, but I don't really seeing, you know, or it might pretty much stay the same where we currently have like – Microsoft has like 20%, Nintendo has like 15%, and Sony has like 45%.
Oh, the rest, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, it's interesting to see, you know, how all these things are going, you know, moving forward, but I think it's kind of cool how, and usually the company Jax has like tons of these things, but I think Atari is actually releasing the same model, same form factor of the 2600.
Yeah, the came out with, originally it was the one in the joystick.
Yeah, I've got that one.
And that was just liquid crack for them. They sold so many of those with retro, and they moved on to like all these different versions, the Namco ones.
Yeah, the problem with...
So Atari made, it's not Jax, I think it's actually... Is it Atari? Is Jax product or is it Atari?
I think it
product?
Was a. I'll have to look because I've got
Google
it.
Google knows everything.
Yeah.
I'll have to.
Because I got that one. The problem with the original Nintendo, no, the original Atari joystick with the 10-in-1 games, is that they put like Circus Atari on there, and Circus Atari was not a joystick game; it was a paddle game.
Right. Well, they actually released a paddle.
A paddle one. Yeah. I never liked paddle games though, except for Circus Atari. I actually liked that one. And then I think Activision went through Jax to do a release of their stuff, but they're releasing the same form factor of the old Atari 2600 cartridge console, only it's going to have, I don't know, how many ROMs on there. Is it the whole library of Atari ROMs?
They could definitely do it, because the entire collection's under only a couple, but they'd have to get the licensing rights from all these other game developers.
No, I think it would be Atari original games,
okay,
as in
yeah.
like Circus Atari or like what, Slot Racer or Air Sea Battle.
Everything
and all the originals.
Made by Activision.
Yeah. And of course, Activision had the best games for Atari.
Now, I actually still have my Atari 2600.
Does it work?
Yes.
Really?
Because I bought one recently, a while ago, and made sure that but I'm still waiting for a ColecoVision something. I was a ColecoVision gamer, so I'm just waiting for some ColecoVision thing.
I think you're the only one.
Smurfs for ColecoVision.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I remember
the
Mousetrap.
First Mario-style game ever. Adventure? No, Venture.
Oh, Venture. That's right. Yeah, it sucked. So, Jason, thanks for calling.
Well, thank you.
No
Have
problem.
A good night.
Yeah.
Mom says hi, by the way. You
know? Oh, great.
She's very popular in the chat room now.
Tell her we say hi.
Take care, guys.
Definitely. Yeah, speaking of the chat room, I just noticed that Das Familiar, a chat room regular, is making this note. He's in regard to the caller that had the question about having the XP partition on the Mac. And I don't know if he was saying an XP partition.
Not a partition. He actually
wanted
to be able to have
mount the drive.
Mount the drive.
Yeah.
And have it do it automatically every time.
I see the things that are happening in the chat room, but I think you're answering a question that hasn't quite been asked yet. Maybe next week. I don't know. you never know. These questions could always come up here, there, and everywhere. But we're getting ready to wind down here, and I certainly want to thank everybody for tuning in. We had over 1,000 live listeners tonight. And,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord.
Possibly
I wouldn't have sucked so much if I had known.
It's okay. I don't know if it's our record, but it's definitely.
It's not a record.
No, it's not a record, but we're climbing back up there again. And next week, I don't know if we've got anybody lined up at this point, but you know, I'll be looking for somebody. Actually, we may be able to get Andrew.
Wait, is
from
that, next
Gear
week's
Live.
Not. Next
no.
week's not the Gnomedex
no.
week, is it?
2 weeks from now, we're doing the show from Gnomedex's floor, and that's going to be a hot live show. It's going to be absolutely amazing. We're going to have everybody who's there for the Gnomedex conference, you know, A-list bloggers all the way through.
You know, I'm thinking we actually should probably set up some extra microphones for that night.
We're probably going to need to. We're going to need as many microphones. I want this thing, though. I want this thing.
Yeah.
The Howard Cosell setup.
Yes. Definitely the microphone. I don't know if that was my worst Howard Cosell or not. But I suppose before I start thinking about
things.
That had
to be close
to
your worst Howard Cosell.
Not like you've heard my best.
I may
not
have.
Not like anybody has. So, Jake, 8-Bit Jake, thank you for coming in.
No problem.
Appreciate it. And I know Jake's got to get you to the ferry.
Well, it's like one of those things, like if you don't get the 10 o'clock ferry, the next one's 12:30, which gets you there at 1:30, which gets you in bed by 2.
See, this is when we moved out here, my wife wanted us to live on Whidbey Island because there was this really cool house she saw online that was available, and I said, I am not going to be a slave to the ferry.
That's a great place to retire, but, you know, I mean, the ferry, you know, it's interesting. Bring a laptop, bring a PlayStation Portable, because you can only look at the scenery gets a little old.
Yeah.
But I met my girlfriend on the ferry.
And then, of course, we're talking about a boat ferry, not like the ferries that you can refill your hearts
right.
Zelda.
You use a net
with.
And you keep them in a little jar.
Yeah.
I just kind of said, The Legend of Zelda, it's like you can never find these jars, and you need to find the jars, and they're like one of the rarest things you could actually find, and it's a mason jar to keep fairies in. And it's sort of like one of those great video game logic things about, like, there's a wooden door, but I have a rocket launcher, but I need the key to get to the wooden door, but I can't use a rocket launcher to blow away the wooden door.
Fair enough. Well, it seems like we peaked at over 1,000 listeners today, which I think is a fantastic number. And we'll be back next week, possibly with another guest. I'm going to do my best to find someone good. And, of course, taking live calls. We'll be doing that pretty much every week from here on out, well, except for 2 weeks from now, when we won't have live calls. We'll be at the GnomeDex convention right here in downtown Seattle, which has sold out. So with that, folks, we'll catch you online at thechrisperilloshow.com. I'd like to thank Microsoft for sponsoring our program every single week. They've been great, great sponsors, and as well as Limelight Networks for hosting the stream. And they're really going to feel the pinch here in a couple weeks when the whole world starts listening to what we're doing at GnomeDex.
I would like to thank Microsoft for shrinking the controllers on the Xbox. That was good.
There you go. And with that, I'll let Jake have the last word. We'll see you later.
The Windows Media stream for the live broadcast of The Chris Perillo Show is provided by Limelight Networks. Listen to the live Chris Perillo Show in Windows Media Player. Download the latest version of the player for Mac and Windows users at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.